The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Thompson, and you're joining us with Talk Saratoga. And I'd like to introduce some special guests today. Anise Mop.
My pleasure.
See, I forget already. And Kimberly Weir, who's been with us many times before and has been one of our favorite guests. Now, Anise, I have to tell you, everybody knows that I'm a security guard at the Saratoga Racetrack in the summertime, which I am not this year. But Anise was there as an intern, I think, with Saratoga Special, which is a daily newspaper that's put out up there and around different tracks around the country. And she made such an impression on everybody because she's such a sweet person. She's good at what she does, and she's very outgoing. And I just want to welcome both of you here this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Rick. I'm thrilled to be here and so excited that I'm fortunate enough to be in Saratoga this summer despite this odd year.
Oh, it's terrible. I said, you know, when you get older, you don't want time to go by too fast, but I can't wait till this year is over.
as long as next year is better.
Yes, as long as next year is better.
But we're thinking positive thoughts, that's for sure.
Oh, you bet.
Sending that good juju that way.
Well, it did give us an opportunity to see each other, though, and I was so happy when Kim called up and said that you were coming here for a couple weeks. So it's always nice to see you. I mean, you know, it's one of the highlights of the track to see some of the people that have passed through the press box and that do come back. So, and it's nice to stay in touch with them on Facebook, which, you know, with Twitter and I don't get along that well. So, you know, at least
Twitter takes a special touch.
Yeah.
Facebook's a little more welcoming, I think.
Yeah, it's very, Facebook is much more straightforward.
Well, listen, I want to have the people get to know you. And I just want to start out our interview in saying that you are a 2018 to 2020 Godolphin Flying Start trainee. Well, actually, you're a graduate now.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in that and what the experience was?
So Godolphin Flying Start is a two-year international thoroughbred industry management program. And it was started in 2003 by Sheikh Mohammed, who those who are familiar with racing would know him through Godolphin and Darley. So Darley Stallions and the Godolphin Racing operation is all owned by Sheikh Mohammed. And so he created this program with the goal of educating young professionals and giving them this incredible overview of the global thoroughbred industry. So the program takes place over the course of 2 years, and trainees have the opportunity to study in 5 different countries, starting out in Ireland, and then Newmarket, England. We spend the longest phase of the course in the U.S. before going on to Australia, Dubai, and then in a normal year, you would return to Ireland where you would graduate, and we were the first group to experience a virtual segment of Flying Start. So finishing remotely from our homes, which had its own share of, you know, opportunities and learning experiences. So it was an amazing 2 years. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. And it was actually the first educational program I was kind of exposed to or taught about when I got involved and became interested in the thoroughbred industry. It was just shortly after the Godolphin Flying Start program, which was then called Darley Flying Start, began. Somebody sent me something. Speaking of Facebook, they shared a story about the then Darley Flying Start program to my Facebook page and said, you should apply for this someday. And it just stuck in my mind. I read about it and I thought, that is absolutely what I'm going to do. I just went on to do as many internships as I could and build my skill set and my knowledge base, and was very fortunate to be one of the 12 selected to commence the 2018 to 2020 year.
How did you get up to Saratoga to do your internship? I mean, were you interested in the horse racing industry at that point? You were.
Yes. So, and it's actually really funny. So I started out at this very small track near Fargo, North Dakota. So I grew up near Fargo, North Dakota, and we have this little track called the North Dakota Horse Park, and they run both quarter horse racing and thoroughbred racing. And that was great because I could get my hands on a variety of different jobs. And somewhere along the way, I learned a little bit more about quarter horse racing and that the American Quarter Horse Association has some great youth programs. So I went through this youth scholarship competition that AQHA puts on, and then I ended up interning for the American Quarter Horse Association in Amarillo, Texas. And I stumbled across an online posting for an internship with the Saratoga Special on a website called the American Horse Publications. And my mom had actually driven me down to Texas for that internship. That was in 2015. And I thought, well, there's no way now I can apply for this internship in Saratoga Springs, New York. And just as a side note, I was much more interested in thoroughbred racing. I loved thoroughbred racing. But I thought, well, I can't apply for both of these. And so I had kind of a plan A summer job and a plan B summer job after doing this internship in Texas. And they both fell through. And so I contacted the guys with the Saratoga Special and had a Skype interview with Tom Law, their managing editor. And I think they're probably most interested just in the fact that I come from North Dakota. And so my amazing mother was thinking, you know, yes, of course I will drive you to Saratoga. So she came down to Texas and drove me back up north. And we had this whole road trip through the Southwest and driving through New Mexico and Wyoming and up through South Dakota and back home to North Dakota. And then, you know, a month and a half later, she was driving me out east to Saratoga Springs. And I think I got here and it was like, wow, what a place. And I've been back every year since then.
I know. It's great. Now, I've always heard that the middle part of the country is big quarter horse racing areas. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, and even, you know, even more than just racing, quarter horses in general. So American Quarter Horse shows, whether it's Western Pleasure or, you know, showing English or working cattle, you know, the quarter horse would be the breed that, you know, everybody who has a horse would generally have a quarter horse.
Because I know a friend of mine used to be a jockey out in the middle, you know, out in the middle. But he's from New York. I don't know if you remember the box captain up there, Phil, the little short guy. That's just
I'm
down.
Sure we cross paths.
Yeah.
Many,
oh, if you went
times.
Down to the winner's yeah. circle from the press box, he's the guy standing there.
You would have been seeing me race back and
box.
Forth.
But he was a quarter horse. He used to be a jockey for quarter horses.
Oh, wow.
Out in the Midwest.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and you know. But so he told me, he said, it's big out there. He said a lot of the county fairs have quarter horse races. And so he said, you know, in the east and the west, you don't get that much of it.
Right. But no, it's amazing. It's a completely different vibe than thoroughbreds. It's just a much more Western culture, you know, even going to the races. Trainers would have their cowboy hats and their belt buckles, and regardless of whether it's in the Midwest or, you know, I've been quarter horse racing in California, it just has a much different flair from the thoroughbred industry, and it's very unique and, you know, beautiful in that sense as well.
Well, you know, I know how dedicated you are, and of course I know how dedicated Kim is, but it seems that the thoroughbred industry is probably one of the industries that people are most dedicated to. I mean, you can be a CPA and be dedicated to your job, or a CEO of a company and like that. But thoroughbred people are really, really dedicated. And I'm always amazed at that.
It's amazing that I have heard so many stories of people who've come from very roundabout backgrounds, whether they're, you know, they started out as a teacher or a coach, or, you know, I have a friend who's an accountant and is involved in the industry. But once you are captured or intrigued by something in the thoroughbred industry, you can't just drop it and mm-hmm. leave. You know, people tend to keep coming back. And I think it's the connection to the animal that, you know, it's the beauty of the sport, the passion for the animal themselves, how competitive these horses are. And then, you know, it's a team effort to get that horse to the races between the trainer and the jockey and the hot walker and the groom and every person that it takes along that horse's journey to get them from the breeding farm into training into racing. And for me, it's those, you know, it's those stories and capturing that makes me really passionate about it.
Yeah. I mean, I can liken it, you know, to farming. Mm-hmm. Farmers are the backbone of us. They don't make much money, but they love the animals that they work with. They love to farm the land, and usually it's generational. Mm-hmm. And there's something in working with animals or the earth that just make it so nice, you know. And so you really are into it now. After you graduated, you moved to, where do you live now? The heartland of racing?
Yes, that is correct.
I'm based in Lexington, Kentucky right now, which I had the chance to live there for a while before I started Godolphin Flying Start. And it's one of those magical places. It has a completely different aura than Saratoga. I think Saratoga is just very much this summer place to be. It's like this magical oasis with, you know, this bustling little town and this beautiful track. But then Lexington is just in the heart of, you know, these rolling green pastures and fences and beautiful farms, and it just, it's kind of like the pulsing heart of the industry. You've got Keeneland, which is another racetrack. You have lots of sales. So there are sales at Keeneland and Fasig Tipton, the breeding farms, the racing. You have Churchill Downs not far away. So living there is, I'm very fortunate to be there.
Mm-hmm. Is there a racetrack in Kentucky? And I'm, you know, I could be thinking of another track, but only races once a month and it's all turf. Races?
Yes, Kentucky Downs.
Kentucky Downs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that would be kind of on the way to Tennessee.
Okay. Excellent. You know your country, boy, I'll tell you.
From your mother's
car. Don't quiz me too much here. I don't know how many capitals I remember.
Yeah, that's okay. So you graduated from the program. We know a little bit about your passion for the horse racing industry. You also are involved in a little bit of advocacy and media, aren't you? Now, you do it's not a podcast, but you do a program on Friday evenings. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I started working for America's Best Racing, which is sort of the fan development body of the thoroughbred industry. So they do a lot of digital media and content online that would be very much based around education and entertainment, and really anybody would enjoy consuming it. But I would say definitely, you know, somebody who's just starting to get into the sport and is trying to learn as they go. And so they approached me and Darwin Vizcaya and Claudia Spadaro. And Claudia is based at Gulfstream in Florida, and Darwin is based in New York. And they asked us if we'd be interested in doing a bilingual show, so in both English and Spanish. And they wanted it to be a show where, you know, people who only speak English and don't understand Spanish could tune into and get something out of as well. And so we have a really cool dynamic where Darwin speaks mostly Spanish. Claudia will speak Spanish and English. I'll do probably mostly English, but I still do quite a bit of Spanish as well. And, you know, we try to go through and have a flow where, you know, we'll each discuss a topic and then translate as we go. And we try to keep it as, you know, fun and conversational as possible. It's La Trifecta, you know, because we picked that name because okay. A trifecta or La Trifecta means the same in Spanish and in English. And it's just like three friends talking about horse racing and inviting guests and interviewing them as well.
That's neat. Now, Darwin, wasn't he a race caller also?
Yep.
Because we had Naira had a Spanish-speaking race caller who unfortunately isn't there anymore. He was one of the best, I think, Luis. But I think Darwin was up there also. I used to see him up there.
Yep. So Darwin did work for Naira, and now it's really cool when we want to do... We did a little recap show a couple weeks ago for La Trifecta, and so Darwin will call the races for us on when we go through, you know, like we went through all the Traverse Day Stakes races and talked about the winners in each race, and then we had the replay, and he called the race in Spanish.
That's neat.
So he's immensely talented. He has this amazing, booming media voice, and they're both fantastic to work with.
There's no amount of things that you don't amaze me with. And one of them was when you and Kim met and you were down at the bottom of the press box stairs and you were talking and all of a sudden you went into Spanish and you're going on and on. She's going on and on. And I'm saying to myself, what the heck is going on here? But you are really fluent and you got yourself fluent in Spanish.
And that was all thanks to my parents, because I had the opportunity when I was in elementary school to go through a Spanish immersion program. So from kindergarten through fifth grade, all of my classes were in Spanish. And so, you know, as a child, that's when you pick up on languages the best. And my mom said, we really want you to do this Spanish immersion program. And, you know, it was kind of unfortunate that the program ended after fifth grade, but then my parents insisted that I continue studying Spanish through college. And then I had through high school. And it was in high school when I had an aha moment and decided, you know, I think, you know, I can kind of see this Spanish thing working out for me, having a career in horse racing. Like, I'd really love to combine these two passions. And so I went on and continued studying Spanish in college, and I studied abroad in Chile because they have horse racing, and I was able to find a university that was situated on a hill overlooking a racetrack, so I could just go to the track all the time. But it worked out really well, and it's something that I love. I love conversing with people in Spanish. I think it's great for our industry to provide those Spanish resources, because around 70% of our incredible workforce are Spanish speaking. We have many, many trainers who are from Spanish speaking countries. And, you know, I'm proud to be able to be part of providing such a unique, you know, media program that people who speak English or Spanish can consume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantastic. I was really surprised how well you just transitioned into that.
And so Kim and I need to practice our Spanish.
That's right. Well, we're going to dinner later. Maybe we'll have it like our appetizer in
solo
Spanish.
Solo en
español.
You
need someone that can speak Italian on your show, too. I mean, you
know. It can grow. There's always room for growth.
We had
Christophe Clement on a couple weeks ago, and he was speaking a bit of French with us, too. So, you know, we're bilingual in many different ways.
That's right.
Now, I think I saw his daughter at the track once. Now, does she have anything to do with his training business? Did she end up going into that?
I'm not sure that, you know, that she is involved with, you know, the hands-on work or, you know, his training, but he does train alongside his son, Miguel.
Okay.
So they work very closely together.
Neat. He was the leading trainer for about 2.5 weeks.
Having an incredible summer.
I know it. Oh, well, so that's great. So Amplify Horse Racing was an initiative to promote education and careers.
Yes. Okay. Exactly.
And you're still doing great in that. And
So that was something that was started in 2019 by myself and a friend of mine, Madison Scott, who's also a graduate of Godolphin Flying Start. And we had similar experiences getting into the thoroughbred industry. She's from Austin, Texas, and I'm from North Dakota, both places where, you know, it's not like you have a lot of immersion in the thoroughbred industry, but we both had a passion for it. And it's kind of, you know, it really depends on who you meet and connecting with the right opportunities, and a lot of things happen by chance. So we co-founded Amplify with the goal of creating a collaborative platform for education and careers in the thoroughbred industry, where we could round up all of these different educational initiatives and programs, centralize them on one platform, and then be able to provide people with some guidance and some education in terms of, you know, these are all of these different programs if you're interested in this. These are all of our different career options. So we've had a few live engagement events last year where we were doing some, you know, tours of tracks, tours of farms. And then this year we had to pivot and do a lot more virtual, which has been a really cool opportunity as well.
Sure. Now, Madison also went through Saratoga. I think she also worked for the Saratoga Special, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. So she was here between her first and second years on Flying Start. And we have a little break between the U.S. phase and the Australian phase. And so she came up here and
yeah, I think she was even here last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, last year. So she now works for Solis and Lit Bloodstock. And so they work with, you know, both purchasing bloodstock for clients, purchasing potential racehorses, and then managing those racehorses throughout their careers. And she's just always juggling, you know, people and horses, and she loves her job. She finds it really engaging. And
now, does she move from track to track, or is she based?
She's based in Lexington.
She's based in Lexington.
Yeah, but does get to travel a bit as a result of her job, which I know is a big perk.
Now, there's and it's great to see you people come back, you girls come back every year, because when you're in the press box and you're up and down the stairs, you go by me about 27 times a day.
And then I get 27 smiles.
I know, and I do too. I mean, it's like, you know, a couple of times it's winks too, you know. But another girl that is down in Lexington now, and I can't think of her name right
Shayna
now.
Shayna Tiller?
Yeah, Shayna.
Shayna would be my roommate.
Oh really?
My gosh.
Yeah,
oh
so
my
it's
gosh.
Like we can never, you know, once you get into that friend group, and, you know, especially with the Saratoga Special, we have just all stayed connected. We have little reunions every now and then. You know,
and they all come back to Saratoga.
Exactly.
Because we texted each other on Facebook, and, you know, she was upset that she couldn't make it up. And because I said, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing you, you know, the girls up here. But I see she's based out of there. I didn't know that you guys were roommates.
So
well, tell her, give her a big high for me.
I certainly will.
And well, there's another one, another young lady that lives in Norwich in New York State that passed through a couple times. And here again, names go right through my head, you know.
But it tends to be good. It's a good group of Saratoga Special alumni.
Yeah, great group of people. And, you know, I know my cousin Billy Blake wrote,
we were there together my first year when I came to the Saratoga Special.
Okay, and then he got into ski. Tony got him a job with, what is it? It's the betting TV out in California.
TBG TV?
Yeah, it could be. He was at Del Mar and then Santa Anita, the TV, you know.
Yeah.
They go back and, but he moved back to Albany. He was out there for like 4 years or so, but he moved back to Albany.
I remember him talking about driving his car across the country.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
it's funny. I don't want too much personal. We can do this after the show, but he met a girl out there.
Oh.
Who was from Albany.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that the way it goes?
She decided to move back to Albany. So Billy decided to move back to Albany. East. So.
Sometimes you just never know how you're going to meet your match.
I know.
It takes moving across the country.
So it's funny. I mean, it's just great. But that shows you the importance of making contacts and meeting people. I mean, absolutely. You have them for the rest of your life, and you know, you have friends. And I don't know if you knew Shayna before.
No. I did not. Yeah. And I also did not know Kim before I met you.
Yeah,
so it's really like, and this was one of those situations where I was here last year running up and down the press box stairs, and I was in a rush to get somewhere, and Rick grabbed me and said, "Nope, you cannot leave until you meet Kim, because you guys are going to hit it off." And so there Kim appeared, smiling and so happy and just radiating sunshine and enthusiasm, as always.
Oh,
and
too much.
It's been an amazing year since then.
I told Kim, I said, there's one of two things that are going to happen when she comes down the stairs. She goes, "What's that?" I said, "She's either going to accept my invite to meet you, or she's gonna stiff arm me and run down the stairs to the winner's circle."
Thank goodness I paused and took a breath
for a moment.
I need to do a little bit more, you know, chill and mindfulness. I'm not always running on to the next thing. You never know who you're gonna meet.
It does take you extra time to get down those stairs to the winner's circle.
You get your steps in. I'd put in around 8 to 10 miles a day when I was working for the Saratoga Special. So.
Yeah, it's
or just being in Saratoga in general.
Yeah, it's a walking town. Yeah,
Kim knows all about the walking this year.
Yes, I'm getting an extra dose.
Well, I want to just, before I'm going to have Kim take over a little bit on the some of the questions that she's got for you, but give me your website address.
AmplifyHorseRacing.org.
Okay, AmplifyHorseRacing.org. And you can check, La Trifecta on YouTube, and you can watch their interviews or their show on Friday nights. And I've seen them, and they're fantastic.
I'm glad you've enjoyed them.
Oh, I do, and especially the girl on the left-hand side of the frame. she's one of my favorites. So.
Oh, me too. I haven't even seen the screen, but I have a feeling
so
I know who you mean.
Down. My daughter comes over the house for dinner on Friday nights, and so I watch TV downstairs, but I always have my computer, and I watch the show.
Oh, that is so great.
Yeah,
I'm flattered. I'm glad. And I want English audiences to know, even if you don't speak any Spanish at all, everybody is welcome and invited to join us for listening in on the show, because you will understand.
You can understand the show, and it's neat to hear
the different languages,
Spanish
going
too.
Back and forth.
Sure, it's a great show.
It'd be great. Having been a Spanish teacher in a past life, it would be an excellent tool to show students that you can listen to Spanish
and
English, and it's cool to hear them next to each other.
I'm sure as you've no experience in your adventure this summer hot walking, that you know, once you pick up on a few horse related Spanish words, that can also be really helpful as you know navigate your way into the thoroughbred industry. And you know, it is a very bilingual sport when you're actually working in it and immersed in it. You know, we have people who are working here from Mexico and Guatemala and Costa Rica and Chile and Argentina. So I'm sure it's come in handy for you as
Yes,
well.
It has. It's been a wonderful opportunity to practice.
Have there been any new words you've learned?
Well, yes, because my vocabulary has never been horsey. I've used my Spanish in a number of different career paths, but they were everything from banking to economic development and other things. But learning the word for aula, the stall, it took a little while. Like it took me a while. And there's a long list of these words that I'm still acquiring.
It takes a while. Even this show, I've had to expand my vocabulary immensely. And there are still times when I'll get stuck on something and I can't think of the word, and so I'll have to go through a little bit of Spanglish, and eventually, you know, you stumble your way through, and they still understand what you're getting at, and you learn as you go.
I do that in English.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
I did take 3 years of Spanish, and I can remember a little bit about it. Como está usted is one of them.
Perfect.
Ay, Chihuahua. And then there's always Hoochie Mama. So that's about it.
That's your whole shtick. Oh, my gosh, Rick. It's awesome. Oh, well, it is fun to have you take Anise through all the adventures she's been on since we last were together. I'd like to call us the new trifecta. This is not replacing your trifecta, but this is a different trio. And so grateful to Rick for having introduced us on that magical day a year ago, and for us all to be back together after all that Anise has done in a year.
And I felt that I've taken a road trip from Texas
to
North Dakota, to Saratoga, to Lexington, to Ireland. I mean, I've been all over the place here today.
So. I feel the same way, because really, to come back to Anise's adventures, from the moment that Rick introduced us and as we bonded last summer on many, many shared interests, then I had the opportunity, Rick, to kind of travel with Anise through many of her stops via phone calls. I guess we eventually switched to Zoom when the whole world went to Zoom in the spring. But at least some memorable phone calls for me were when Anise was in Australia, which is a place that I love and a place I've spent some time, not as much as Anise now, but and then even in Dubai, right before everything got unplugged ever so quickly. And one thing I'll share with you, Rick, is that Anise and I had a plan, but our plans all changed and for the better. I was planning to go to Ireland in June, and it just so happened that I was going to be there during the same time that Anise was there. So we actually had a plan. We had a date.
We were going to meet up
at a pub in Bubs, Dublin.
An Irish adventure. We're going to have so much fun. The world, we just had to pivot like everything.
That's
else.
Right. So it was not this time, not
so
this year.
You're
going
to have to go down to the Parting Glass.
Right. Maybe that's where we should have our dinner. I had another plan. But so while that did not happen, it still was a wonderful treat when Anise texted and said, I'm hopping in the car. I'm on my way. Yet another road trip. She's driving up here. But I think that as we try to capture some of all the amazing things you've done over this past year and couple years and many years, I would love to know from the horsey perspective, as Rick teed me up, is what are, you know, maybe two or three of the magical moments that you most treasure, and I'm sure there's a long, long list, but from your Flying Start experience, and that we're bringing it right back to the horses, to those animals themselves.
Yeah.
I would love to hear those.
Wow. It's, I would say, tops for me, and it's really hard to have a number one. But we're very, very fortunate in each country that we're in, we have the opportunity to take part in an externship, which is essentially like an internship with either a different organization or some sort of industry entity or a trainer. And so while I was in the U.S., I was an ambassador for the Thoroughbred Industry Employee Awards. And so this is an awards program that's sponsored by Godolphin. So we're also the, you know, wonderful beneficiaries of Godolphin through Flying Start, but Sheikh Mohammed wanted to create this awards program worldwide. So it actually started in Europe and has grown to several different countries, and it's to recognize the unsung heroes of the thoroughbred industry, whether it's backstretch workers or, you know, racing stable staff, breeding farm staff, individuals of various organizations who would just dedicate their lives to the horses, to serving the sport. It tends to be a very, you know, rigorous career sector to go into, or I should say industry to go into, because, you know, horses don't, they need to be cared for every single day. And so through this ambassadorship that I was doing, I traveled to several different racetracks and farms, and I think I made it to 13 tracks and around 20-some farms around the U.S., just speaking to people about the awards program and teaching them how to nominate and encouraging them to recognize some of those people. So it was really amazing to hear people's stories, because that's what I got a lot of along the way was, you know, I've been working in this industry for 30 plus years, or, you know, the horses actually saved me. My life was like this, and now I just, you know, have dedicated it to this. And so that was amazing. Australia was like a wild adventure that it's hard to even wrap your mind around looking back, but it's very different in that, you you know, mares in the U.S. and in most countries, when they foal or they have their baby, they would be in a stall, and it would be, you know, a thick straw bedded stall, very cushy environment, very highly monitored. Whereas a lot of Australian mares will foal outside in small paddocks. So it's like baby is born and baby is outside and here's the great big bright wide world.
Wow.
And depending on the farms, they will actually herd their mares or even lead mares with baby walking next to them from four-wheelers or what they called quad bikes there. So I had to learn how to essentially pony a mare. So you'd see racehorses being ponied to the starting gates. I would have to pony mares off the side of a four-wheeler.
Oh, my gosh. And there has to be video of that. That would be an amazing thing to see.
It was incredible. It was just one of those things where it's so normal to them, and I got such a kick out of it. I just, every single day, that was the highlight of my morning when I could pony one of the mares next to the quad bike. So that was a massive highlight. And goodness gracious. I mean,
you have one from Ireland just because then you could be doing a trio of countries.
Okay, so actually, I loved Ireland, but while we were there, we had the chance to go to the Arc de Triomphe, one of the biggest races in the world, and it's held in France. And so it's one of the world's most prestigious races. It was just beautiful. And the whole experience that we had in France was almost surreal. It's hard to wrap it up into words, but the year that we were there, it was won by this very, very good filly named Enable, who's actually still in training. Yeah. And she's won two arcs. So that was her second arc that we got to see. And she beat another very, very good filly. And so it was just one of those surreal, you know, how do you wrap your mind around this kind of moments. And I'm very grateful for all those experiences.
Oh, well, I know it's hard to pick a few, but those were very vivid, and we feel like we were there with you for each of them. And I know that I don't think that we had talked about the fact that you were at the Arc for Enable's second victory, because last year my husband and I were there at Arc for my big birthday,
and we went
to the Arc to see Enable make her valiant try for her third. And while she didn't quite get there at the wire, she was no less in her second. But it was so beautiful,
and
it was fun for us in a million ways. As you said, it's hard to describe. That venue is incredible. But we were there for the second year at the brand new viewing stand, which is an amazing place, but there were so many things that we were the beneficiary of because we were the second year. And one of the ones, which I find very funny, it actually ties back to the fact that you were in Ireland when you went to France, is that we heard, and you can validate this or not, that in the first year, the French were utterly unprepared for the invasion of British and Irish racing fans who would be descending upon Longchamp, and they simply did not have enough opportunities to sell beer and Guinness in particular. So I had the benefit of being there for year two, and they
were well
very,
prepared
very
that
prepared.
Time. Yes. We know what's coming.
Yes. And they said that we simply did not have enough food and drink for the invasion. So we were happy to be part of that invasion.
Sounds like American Pharoah's Belmont run.
Yes.
Oh my
yes.
Goodness.
Yes. There's, I think, a lot of similarity in that a moment you just was so big. So, well, I just think it's wonderful that you, my dear, had the opportunity to have all those moments because you are such a terrific communicator in both English and in Spanish, and you're finding these new platforms through Amplify, through America's Best Racing, through La Trivecta to share all those things you've learned, distilling them down into experiences that new fans and new professionals can grab onto, and you make it feel very accessible, which I think is really, really important. Yeah. I often have said, Rick, since you first introduced us, and it didn't take me long to figure it out, that with no pressure on Anise, I say, this is the face of the future of racing. Mm-hmm. and it's in everything you're doing that I think we have great hope for the business, Anise.
Well, thank you. And well, I'm flattered and very humbled and thankful for you guys that you've been part of my journey, because, you know, I give all of the credit to my mentors who brought me up to this point and who have given me all these opportunities, had that kind of faith in me and have taught me along the way. So thank you to you guys.
Well, I'm not into the horse racing industry as you and Kim are, but my vantage point is to meet you when you're young not that you're old now, but when you're young, and to see you come back every year and to see how much you've grown in the industry, to me, that's amazing. And you have been one of the top tier ones because of your diversity. I think that, I mean, because you're also, I just had wanted to mention this, and you may have done this on, you know, in your talk with Kim, but you're also involved in the social media and website information of Amplify Horse Racing too. And you also write articles, correct?
Yeah. So with Amplify, I, you know, was involved in curating all of the content that we have on the website and then managing all of the different social media channels and, you know, organizing our various events, whether they're virtual, and organizing what we call horse racing hangouts. So inviting different professionals into conversations with people. But that has definitely, you know, I think I felt very uncomfortable with social media before I had to make sure I branched out into that, because that's a really effective way of engaging with people. But it's been really interesting as I go. As Kim mentioned, you know, delivering the information in a way that would be easily consumable to somebody who's not an insider of the sport and wouldn't understand all of the jargon, you know, delivering that on a really basic level so that people have a chance to become comfortable with it and work their way up like I had the chance to do. Because when I started, I think in my first summer in Saratoga, you know, very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and excited to learn, but then every time somebody would teach me something, I would think, man, alive, how am I gonna learn all this stuff? How do people learn this? But then you catch on, you get to a point, and people are patient with you, and then you can finally kind of start cruising along.
Sure. And you know, like, it's an industry that you have a lot of people that like to encourage you to learn and grow because, as Kim had said earlier, you're going to be the ones to carry this on. And plus, the more people that you can get involved in these shows, or the shows that you do on YouTube or the writing that you do, it's going to get people interested. And I just think, and again, no, but not everybody is as knowledgeable or as outgoing as you are. Mm-hmm. They love the industry and they do love working in it, but you hit it from a lot of different angles. And I think that's one of the things that's going to carry you on to really success in the future, because you're not afraid to do different things. And, you know, you're a special person.
She sure is. She gives us great hope. And I think that, you know, as someone who's now and not nearly as young as Miss Anise, but very much in this industry, those of us who love the industry want it to flourish, to improve, to innovate, to continue to evolve. The times are changing. The world is changing. And if we love something, we want it to do well. And we need the best and brightest minds. Right. And I think that's what Anise, not only being one of those, but is a channel and a pathway for more people to bring their talents to the industry.
And I'm you know, very thankful to hear that. And I don't mean to parrot you, but throwing it back at you, you know, I think that there's responsibility for people in the industry to be a great ambassador for it. And, you know, you are one of those amazing, radiant people where, you know, I knew very little about Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation when Kim and I met, and you just radiated this enthusiasm and desire to teach and bring me into that sphere and make me feel very welcome. And now it's one of the, you know, the things that I share with other people, and that, you know, you really need to learn about this, and, you know, we really need to focus on aftercare, and it's about being that, you know, all-inclusive, excited, enthusiastic ambassador for something that, you know, you sharing that with me, then, you know, now I'm trying to pass that on down the line to other people who might want to learn about it.
Well, I think it's a good thing, because you just don't want to focus on the horse from when it's born till it's done racing.
Yep.
I mean, they do have a life after that. And I think the aftercare is a big part of that. And it should, like you said, it should be promoted, and people know about it and are enthusiastic about it. One other thing I wanted to ask you is, do you see horse racing evolving in a direction that to be sustainable is going to have to adapt to different things? Or do you think that with good stewardship, it's going to be able to survive like it is now?
I like that word, good stewardship. And I think that I think that horse racing is going to, you know, continue as it is. I think there's this amazing group of people that embrace it and love it and will always follow it. But we all do have to be ambassadors in some way and constantly evaluating and reevaluating the message that we're sending and what we're doing to bring in new people, because it is a very complex sport, and the amount of data that you need to understand in order to, you know, go to the races and read the past performances and read about past races about the horses. There are tons of different organizations and different entities involved. And I think it's really easy once you dive into it and you've wrapped your mind around this and you know the language to just, you know, speak the language of horse racing, but not consider, you know, oh, my friend Joe over here, my friend Sally doesn't completely understand it. I need to make sure that I'm delivering this on a level that anybody can understand, because to become interested in something, you have to feel like you have a grasp on it. And if people feel like it's over their head, they're just going to say, this isn't for me.
Sure.
So just having that in mind and making sure that we're always, everybody can be an educator, that everybody is constantly educating about the sport and striving to always do better.
That's great. And I'm glad, like I say, there always seems to be followers that'll come after, you know, the we think we have great trainers today, but then we always know that there's going to be people that follow them that are going to be great trainers or great jockeys or, you know, the pieces of the puzzle that puts the thoroughbred industry together. Even the, like you said, the hot walkers and the grooms. I mean, they're all integral parts mm-hmm. of that industry. So by just keep, educating people and, mm-hmm. They're going to want to be in the sport.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question that I think I know the answer to. During your internship, what was your most standout experience? And I'm going to say I don't want the French experience because I know that's probably what you would say. But other than that, what experience stood out most to you? Like what country or what, you know, part of what you did stands out the most?
I would have to say Australia, because it just, Australia as a whole took me so far out of my comfort zone. It was just, the way everything is operated is so different from what I knew and understood of what we do here in the U.S. And I had never been greatly involved in the whole breeding side of the industry. I've been mostly journalism and communications and had a deeper understanding of racing. But, you know, I guess to make that more specific, learning about the breeding industry there and what I mentioned with the mares foaling outside and getting to experience that side, you know, how you can raise a horse in many different ways and still have the same outcome in that you've developed a racehorse. And then also while I was there, another one of my externships was working for Chris Waller, who's one of the greatest trainers in the world, but known as the trainer of Winx.
Super Winx.
Yes, Super Winx, who is, you know, one of the most famous racehorses in the world, a very famous race mare. And she retired before I came to his barn, but it was amazing to be involved in his operation and start to see how the dots all connect between different farms and the different horses. And so just Australia as a whole, looking back, is like a wild dream. And you're like, oh, did that really happen? Jeez.
I remember talking to you while you were there, and one of the things that stuck out to me, it's when you were with Chris Waller, was that the hours were different there. So tell us, this is a real eye-opener, Rick. Okay. This is so crazy. And
wow. I think a lot of people here, you know, it's tough here in the U.S., the hours, because people have to start around, you know, 4:30, 5, the track opens, I believe, at 5:30. And in Australia, they start training at 3 a.m.,
yeah.
3 a.m.
3 a.m. And so, oh my goodness, I'm a morning person, but that takes a next level.
That's like a nocturnal to person. Be able to.
And the history of that is that when racing started in Australia, most people would not be training full time. They'd have other jobs that they would go on to. So they'd have to be up extremely early, train their horses, and then go on to work.
That's the awesome. I remember you telling me that history is always what makes something so interesting. But so this like office worker is going to go in at 9, but he's been up since 3 training his horses.
And that it remains still very prevalent in the culture, and that a lot of people, horse racing is one of the most popular sports in Australia, and just anybody can own a racehorse or might be involved in a partnership with many friends. Or there were people who I was working with at Chris Waller's who would be there at the track in the morning, and then they would go on to their day job. There was one woman who is a dance teacher, and, you know, she loved it. She just was very driven to be close to the horses and wanting to be at the track. And, you know, another one that was a show jumper. And, you know, it's just so ingrained in this culture.
Sure. Yeah. Well, they probably fall asleep at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
I was certainly asleep by that point.
Yeah. Now, Australia, I was told that Australia horse racing is becoming having a bigger imprint on the thoroughbred industry in the world.
I would certainly say so. It's increased in recent years, where a lot of people, say from the US industry or in Europe, are becoming more involved in Australia. And Northern Hemisphere stallions, so in the U.S., we're part of the Northern Hemisphere, will oftentimes shuttle to stand and breed mares on Southern Hemisphere time. So their breeding season would start in August and go through the end of the year. And so many U.S. stallions will shuttle to Australia. You'll have, you know, people who are owners here, also becoming owners in Australia. The prize money is very good. And it's just an amazing atmosphere at the races. Everybody's like, yes, you know, we love this sport. It's like being in a stadium, you know, it's just electric. And it just, you know, but it's like comparing apples to oranges, you know, to the U.S. I wouldn't say one is better than the other. They're both enjoyable in their own way.
Right. Well, I don't know if you are familiar with the guy, Patrick Cummings. All right. And he's the one that told me this, that because he was based in Hong Kong a while with Hong Kong Racing. And he told me, well, we got talking one time when he came up, and he said that Australia is becoming a real big imprint on thoroughbred racing in Europe and over here in the U.S. So, you know, that's pretty neat. Yeah. Now, where were you in Australia?
We lived in a teeny tiny itty bitty dot on the map kind of town called Aberdeen, which is close to a slightly larger but still very itty bitty dot on the map called Scone. And Scone is basically the center of the breeding industry in New South Wales, Australia. So a lot of horses would be bred and born there, and then they have a system of racing where they have country racing, provincial racing, and metropolitan racing. So then we would travel to Sydney on the weekends to go to, they have a couple racetracks there. They have Royal Randwick and Rosehill Gardens and several others, but that would be considered metropolitan racing. That's like cream of the crop, top racing. Then provincial would be, you know, a class lower, essentially. And then country racing would be, you know, just as it sounds, a smaller country track with, and, you know, you have trainers who will just train country type horses, just provincial trainers and metropolitan trainers, and some who will send horses back and forth. But it's just kind of a different way of categorizing the races to make sure that each horse is in the correct class.
Okay.
So we also travel to Melbourne as well, but we're primarily based in Aberdeen.
Because I've always wanted to go to Australia because they say it's kind of like going back in time a little bit. And I don't know if that's still the case, but things are a little bit slower. Maybe not in the bigger cities, but
people are very chill.
Yeah.
Very chill. It was a very... There's a huge coffee culture there.
Yes, there sure is.
Oh, I just love coffee. I get really excited about coffee and probably drank way too much coffee than my stomach would have liked. The acidity of the coffee is just... But it was so good, and everybody's just very chill. And I would say that, you know, the cafe culture, maybe... I don't know if it adds to that, but just kind of underlines that a bit, that, you know, be chill, sit and have a coffee. Life is just kind of, you know, goes on at an easy pace, whereas that's here neat. We're very go all the time.
Yeah. I know. Yep. Maybe that's what I meant about, you know, being
it's simpler.
More, yeah, simpler.
Yeah.
You know, if you yell a pint, you hold your hand up, something goes flying
that's
in there.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Well, I will have just throw. I'm just going to throw in an unsolicited little personal story because it ties back to Australia. So, having grown up in San Diego. Right on the border with Mexico, in a sort of funny twist of fate, my first trip out of the country was when I was, I think I was 12, and it was with my pony club that I was very, very active with.
Wow.
And my pony club did an exchange with the, I was in the Torrey Pines Pony Club, and we did an exchange with the Sydney Pony Club.
I've heard of this thing before, but that's so cool.
Oh my gosh, it was an amazing.
As a kid, it would have been like a dream.
Oh, an absolute dream, especially, so... As I recall, the first year, and I could have got the sequence wrong, the first year was the year that the Sydney Pony Club came to visit us, and so we all had one of the pony clubbers stay in our home, and it was like an exchange program for two weeks, and so we got to do all the fun things and show, and my exchange sister's name was Janine Morgan, and I seem to recall she came first, although I don't remember much about her visit, but I remember an awful lot about the next year, which is when... You know, in some ways, the things we could do a whole, I could go on and on about this story. It was an amazing adventure. But the perhaps of all the amazing things we did was that 20 plus of my best friends and I got to get on an airplane for 20 hours. Like, it was basically like the longest slumber party ever. And
most people would be terrified of that. And you guys are like, yes.
I laughingly say that, like, it was right about the time that this magical movie came out. It was perfect timing, called Farlap. Which is like the movie of Australia. And Rick, you might have to put this on your watch list because Farlap was the Seabiscuit Secretariat Man of War of Australia. And so they had perhaps the good sense or just the no sense to show that movie on the plane with the 20 screaming 12-year-olds who are loaded with candy up to their gills. And I laughingly think, you know, there were probably other people on that airplane. You know, it was a big 747. But we have no memory of those people. And we definitely have no memory of sleeping. All we did was like, it felt like we ran up and down the aisles. We had our little matching sweatsuits. But anyway, Australia was an amazing, eye-opening, mind-blowing experience for this little 12-year-old. But the fun thing is I was in New South Wales. I mean, oh, there were many fun things. New South Wales, in a teeny little town that was barely a dot on a map, sounds a lot like where you were. My little town was called Bulladela. And the family, the Morgans that I stayed with, had a racehorse in their backyard, just like you're talking about. And the only time I've ever been on in a jockey saddle was in their backyard.
Wow.
That was a long time ago.
So you get there and you're 12 and now guess what? You're riding racehorses, Jim.
It was an amazing, that was just the beginning of the amazing. So I love that your amazing experience included Australia.
That's very cool. It's a really cool place.
Yeah. Well, that's neat. Hope you get back there someday. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
We do have the Australian girl in my group, her name is Anna Power, and she's an incredible, very sharp individual, is engaged now. Her boyfriend proposed shortly after we graduated the course, so we're all thinking, yes,
perfect excuse
for a reunion.
Yes, that is a really good excuse. Excellent. Maybe right around the first Tuesday in November she might do that.
That would be ideal. Hint, hint, Anna.
Yes.
That's in your summertime there, isn't it?
Yeah, That spring.
In our winter time.
Yeah, getting into springtime.
But the Melbourne Cup is that first Tuesday in November, and it's the race that stops a nation. It's an amazing time. And
Yeah, I guess that would be summer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think it's summer. Our winter is their summer, I think.
Because I guess something like that.
Yeah. Because right now they're probably, I know in our fall that's their spring.
It's like a mind twister.
It is.
Yes.
You know, it being a different season, another part of the world.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah. This whole year has just been a mind twister.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, listen, it was great to have you on here today. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, and especially with Kim.
No, it's a pleasure to be tagging along, riding on the coattails of Miss Anise.
And you can't.
Number one fan.
You don't know how nice it is to see you. Without Saratoga happening this year, the races are on, but it's not the same, and it's good to see you.
The feeling is mutual. It's great to have the one little bits and pieces of normalcy, and so to have the team, the other La Trifecta, back together.
That's right. All right. Great.
We may not be not be at the press box stairs, but here we are.
That's right. Here
Thanks
we are.
Thanks for bringing us together.
Well, listen, you have a great day, and Anise, you have a great year, because we'll see you again here in Saratoga next year.
Absolutely. Same time, same place.
Yeah, and we'll be watching you on YouTube and going back and forth on Facebook. But you take care, all right?
Thank you so much, Rick.
And it was nice having you on. So we'll see you soon.